It's time for Bounded Enthusiasm.
Hello, and welcome to Bounded Enthusiasm. I'm Jonathan Liu, your host. My guest today is Stephen Gould, author of the Jumper series and current president of the Science Fiction and Fantasy Writers of America. Hi, Stephen. Thanks for being on the podcast today.
It is an honor to be here.
I have really enjoyed reading the Jumper series. I got started through Impulse, which I read last year, and then went back and checked out all the other ones. I've read through all four, and I reread Impulse in the right order. So I've kind of came to it late, but I got to see all of them in rapid succession. And one thing I noticed was there is actually a pretty big gap between the publication of at least the first three. So I just wanted to find out how that came about. Did you always intend to write a sequel when you first wrote Jumper, or did you come back to it later?
It definitely came back to it later. When it was written, I was not thinking about a sequel at that time. I was working on every book a standalone. So my first four novels were definitely all separate novels. But by the time I got back to that one, it had been the most requested from fans. And I was thinking about it. And it's interesting that those, all four of the books, actually sort of parallel things happening in my own life. Book one, Davy is the son of an active alcoholic, a teen son of an active alcoholic. Fortunately, my father has been sober now for like 35 years, but definitely that reflects the events. When I came back to Reflex, it opens with them arguing about whether or not to have kids and his concern about how the modeling as a father that he'd received from his father was not good, and he was really reluctant to be a father. And that also reflected discussions that were going on with me and my wife. Though by the time I started Jumper, we had actually gone ahead. But it was sort of part of that whole thing. And I have two daughters now, both of them in college. So when Impulse was being written, one of them had just started college and the other one was right in the middle of high school. So again, it sort of reflects the stuff and the things I see as I'm going on. I haven't yet had them start a space program.
I really liked being able to see the way that the world changes. You've got the book set about at the time that they were written. And so we see pre-9/11 to post-9/11. We see pre-smartphones to, by the last book, everyone's got smartphones. But of course, their family is concerned about GPS tracking and things like that. Did you have any difficulty figuring out how to incorporate the changes in the world without having to explain them so much?
I don't think that was a big problem. Actually, it'd be a good question to ask you, since you went back and read the first one, in 1992, really written from very late 89, maybe into 1991. How did it feel to you, that book? I mean, did it have a nice, clear feeling of setting and time? Did you not worry?
It did. I think I didn't know as much of the politics at the time. I was in high school at the time. I kind of knew a little bit about what was going on in the world. I hadn't really paid attention to it as much. The political situations presented in the book that Davy's involved in, those were things where like, oh yeah, okay, I have this vague recollection of those things going on. But the other piece of it was, you know, he spends a lot of time, for example, videotaping his jump sites so that he can remember a site to get back to it. His collection of videotapes is something that, you know, you think about it now, it's like, oh yeah, now you get your iPhone out and you've got all of that.
A little clip, yeah.
It fits in your pocket. And I remember thinking the way that the technology, even though it didn't seem like it was, oh, the technology drives the plot. Like the technology, he spends a lot of time working out how he can jump and how to use his ability with the constraints of the technology of the time. And by the time you get to Scent in Impulse, she's got a completely different set of parameters to work with.
She does, both from the technology of the environment around her, but also she starts building on the stuff that Davy thinks. But interestingly enough, everything that ever happens with the teleportation, I go back to the constraints from the very first book. The twinning in the second book is sort of implied by that one video image they get where they can actually see through the Davy-shaped hole. In the first book, and we talk about the fact that they're matching frames of reference and so on. So all of that really keeps coming back to that one book. And that's my rule. I'm not going to change. I may do slightly different things, but hopefully they're all sort of implied.
I really like the way that it felt consistent, even though what Scent does, what the way Millie jumps even, is different from the way Davy jumps or the way that they think about it conceptually. When you were writing book two and book three, were those abilities, the way that they extended those abilities, were they things that occurred to you later as you were thinking about jumping, you know, like the frames of reference and adding velocity? Was that something that occurred to you later and said, she is changing velocity. How could we play with that?
It did. You know, I pretty much knew I wanted to end up in space even before I wrote Impulse. I felt that it kind of needed to be worked out. I thought in many ways that book is about my daughters, right? And parenting, the problem of parenting. The serious problem of parenting is, I don't know, there's a great line in a Lois McMaster Bujold novel that talks about, so you've got Cordelia Naismith and Aravars Vorkosigan and of course, Corsigan, whatever, and little Miles, who's like five at the time. But he talks about with her father learning to build and fly gliders. And it was always the most difficult thing to figure out when to let go. And that's it with parenting. You've got to model the best behavior you can as they're growing up. But there's got to be a point where you go, okay, I'm here if you need me. But
I think that's why Impulse particularly struck a chord when I first read it. I have three daughters. They're all preteens, you know, they're not teenagers yet. But sometimes I think about them being teenagers, and it is kind of terrifying sometimes, the world that we're in, thinking about sending off my three daughters into this world that is not always built for women.
Right. Or that wants to put women in particular boxes and punishes them when they stray from those boxes. It's almost a little more scary right now, at least perceptively, with the Gamergate stuff going on. I almost see it as back when you had a very small portion of women going into professions, going into that, doing this, there was the mascot factor. Oh, yeah, that's okay there, mascots. When they start getting to the point where they're taking over, we're ruining our pristine male spaces. And then the backlash gets really kind of extreme.
Yeah.
I don't know if it's reflected in actual attacks, as in physical attacks and or even increased sexual assaults. It certainly has been reflected in our online communities.
I think reading Impulse, I really felt Davy's dilemma in how do you let go? How do I take care of this daughter who can now jump? Like she can go anywhere. And does that make it easier to parent a teenager or harder to parent a teenager?
Considering Davy is the classic parental dilemma, but he's also a PTSD person from the events in the second book. And so he's got that extra stuff. But there's two things. I mean, obviously, the fact that she can instantly jump away from harm is a big relief. It means he no longer has to be there every minute to jump her away from harm, which is what he was. It both helped and it made him worry because she started demanding more access to the world as a result. And he could either be part of it. Again, it's the parental dilemma. You can either be part of their explorations of the greater world, or you can be completely shut out of that as they do it anyway.
I just think about teenagers and their impulsiveness, right? The fact that, you know, their brains are still developing. I love the title. I love the title, the play on the title. But the fact that they haven't developed judgment yet, and yet you give this teenage girl this incredible ability, which, yes, can be used to jump her out of harm, but then, of course, it also lets her jump into harm's way in so many ways.
Even generating harm,
Right. The other thing I noticed over the course of books is you do start with Davy as the protagonist in the first, jumper. He's the main character. It's all about him. And in the second book, it is about him and Millie. You trade off between the two of them. But once you get to Impulse, it's definitely about Scent. Her chapters are in first person voice. Davy and Millie's are in third person. And she's the main character. And he starts playing this supporting role. And I was just thinking about that last night. That strikes me as a metaphor for parenting also. I'm a stay-at-home dad. I feel like I am playing a supporting role in my kids' lives. I am trying to encourage them to go out and do something with their lives. And I want to support that. And I can't be the main character in this story, right? as much as I want to be. You know, and I think it gives me some freedom, feeling that I don't have to be the main character in this story right now.
That almost happened by accident. I tried to sell that book, the book was under contract, but I delivered that book without any of the Millie or Davy chapters. It was going to be a first-person book starting over with her, but they felt it was too YA. It was too much of a YA.
Mm-hmm.
They didn't think my audience would necessarily be happy with it because it shifted so far back. I actually went back and took a run at it and added all the YA stuff, which actually then helped. It's really useful to have different perspectives on some things. And it'll be interesting to see what I do in the next two. I have two more under contract. And I'm considering going back in Reflex to all third person with multiple viewpoints. That was an accident. It was obvious. It was like that from the start with Exo, since I had already sort of established it. It is a little different. I haven't heard anybody complaining about it, but I wonder if there's a concern in the sense of readability.
For young adult books to be spaced out so far over a span of, you know, just over 20 years, what have you found with, as far as your audience, like, have you had a lot of people who, you know, read Jumper when they were young adults giving you comments about what they think about the newer books?
I've only seen a couple of negative things, reviews, where people are not happy. Mostly I've gotten pretty much raves. I think a lot of my readers were already women, but probably the best compliment I got on the book was extreme anger from my wife, who said, this was the book I wanted to write. It's not that she wanted to write, you know, exactly this book, but it was exactly the kind of book she wanted to write and the kind of book she wanted so badly when she was young teen woman as the actual main characters.
It struck me that I didn't discover Jumper when I was in high school, but for your readers who have been fans for that long, you know, they could very well be in Davy's position, right? It's 20 years later. They could have read it in high school and then moved on, gotten married, had kids, have kids now that Davy and Millie have sent. That sort of a connection with your readers seems really cool to have. Would other kids be coming into the series through the new books, you think?
Fortunately, I'm in the enviable position that I started writing long enough ago that my first five books, we actually retained the digital rights.
Mm.
So my first five novels, including Jumper and Reflex, I e-publish. And so, yes, those books continue to sell quite well. And they really help every year since I started publishing them in 2010. It's actually, those two books have also never been out of print, which is another unusual circumstance for most mid-list writers.
The last book, Exo, which came out last fall, you know, it has this huge focus on space, and I don't want to get into too many spoilers, but I will say Scent basically wants to go to space. And so a lot of the book deals with the realities of what you need to survive in space and how she goes about getting that, which is great. I mean, we have a lot of space geeks here at Geek Dad. Was the space program something that you've always been interested in? You said you mentioned from the beginning you wanted to get into space. So what's your interest in the space program? What sparked that? And how'd you go about getting all of the information that goes into this book?
Well, I have long been a fan of our space program, of human space travel, not just U.S. space travel. I think I was 14. Let me think. Yeah, 14. And watched Neil Armstrong step onto the surface of the moon on a little 4-inch Sony black and white television in my kitchen in Honolulu. That was just amazing. And disappointing in a way, since we haven't been back to the moon since the 70s. But we're doing some amazing stuff. I think we're just about to pass 15 years of continuous occupation of the International Space Station. And I've long been a fan of the ISS. I did a lot of research for this, but it was more like confirming a lot of stuff that I was aware of and just making sure. The most I had to do was on specifics of orbital mechanics. That was the big one. And thank God there's all sorts of amazing sites now where you can literally track real-time nearly every satellite that is in orbit around our planet. You can see exactly how high it is off the surface of the Earth. You can see what speed it's going, what angle across what ground track. It's just really cool. And that was very helpful when figuring out all this stuff.
Where would you take our space program?
Well, provided that we don't make our own planet uninhabitable, I would like to see something that really decreases the cost of that first 100 kilometers. It's not really the first 100 kilometers. It's the first 7 miles a second. It's the speed you have to get before you're just going to fall back. Unfortunately, something like a space elevator, which is not at all a bad idea, runs into the same problem we have both in EXO and in the movie Gravity, the cloud of debris that we've been putting up in the orbit. So we've got to figure out ways to solve that. I may be doing some more on that in the next book, and I'll definitely probably do some more with what happens at the very end of the book, without, again, giving away too much. But also tying that to stuff that's happening on Earth, the people and situations on Earth. There's all sorts of odd things happening on Earth. Among other things, we've got this massive drought out in California, right? Mm-hmm. And we had this horrible drought in Texas. Here's three people who actually can move amazing amounts of water around the planet without at least apparent energy cost. So that may be another thing we're going to examine. We'll see.
Well, I look forward to seeing what else you come up with. I also know that you, besides the Jumper series, you're working with James Cameron on sequels to Avatar and novels based on the movies. Is there anything you can say about those, or is that under wraps?
Well, it got shifted back a year. The original release date was 2016, December 19th, 19th, 17th, whatever. It's the same date that he released both Titanic and the first Avatar.
Okay.
And since those are the two most profitable movies in the history of movies, they decided to keep going with that date. The second movie, in other words, the sequel to Avatar, is going to be released in, I believe, December 2017. I was in a room with Cameron and four really great screenwriters, Amanda Silver and Rick Chaffa, who did the Planet of the Apes movies. Mm-hmm. One of her very early projects was The Hand That Rocks the Cradle. Shane Salerno, who did Savages, which is not a science fiction movie, but he also was one of the screenwriters on Armageddon. You don't want to blame him for the scientific infacilities of Armageddon. I think that's all on Michael Bay. And the other screenwriter was Josh Friedman, who did, among other things, the Spielberg War of the Worlds. Mm. But also he was the showrunner and main writer on the Sarah Connor Chronicles. Really excellent group of people. We had an archivist and a writer's assistant. And so we were in there until like December of 2013, plotting out the next three movies.
Okay.
I will say that they each are very interesting movies in and of themselves, and that they have a very cool overall arc, a really neat overall arc. And I'm going to be doing four novels. So one that is the original Avatar movie, plus one for each of the other movies. And one of the cool things about doing that first book again is now I can do foreshadowing of some of the events and characters that will be in the next three movies.
And are those expected to be kind of spaced out with the movies?
I would suspect that the first one will come out 9 to 6 months or so before, but that the other books, because they will have spoilers, will be simultaneously released with the
movies.
With the movies. Mm-hmm. Foreshadowing, not giving away.
Right.
Though it'll be interesting seeing people's speculation based on the stuff they find.
We're almost out of time, but I did want to touch on, I know you're the president now of the Science Fiction Fantasy Writers of America, and I know there were some conflicts when you first took office. I wanted to kind of touch a little bit on what's going on in the world of science fiction now with the Hugo Awards, particularly, if you had anything you wanted to say about how you feel about the industry.
Oh, it's shaking out?
Yeah.
So for the first quick summary of what's going on, first of all, just to be clear, the Hugo Awards are chosen and awarded by the World Science Fiction Convention, which is not something run by the Science Fiction and Fantasy Writers of America. And it's voted on by their attending and supporting members. CIFWA gives out something called the Nebula Awards, as well as the Ray Bradbury Award and the Norton Award. Not our circus, not our monkeys.
Yeah,
but,
which probably you're glad.
Well, I think someone from the Horror Writers of America said, oh my God, we're golden for 3 years. We could do all sorts of stupid stuff and it wouldn't, you know. So what happened is a group of writers who felt that they were not getting the attention they deserved because of the kind of writing they did, which they viewed as more Campbellian, as in John W. Campbell, who was the editor of Astounding Magazine in the so-called golden age of SF. They were writing stuff that was popular, that sold well, but they weren't getting on the award ballots. They'd got together and decided to do a slate. Now, they made allies, and some of their members of this group are people who have particularly conservative opinions, who stray towards the right side of the thing, or in some cases go all the way off the map. One quit SFWA in a huff last year when people, including SFWA members, but lots of people, just reacting to some particularly homophobic posts of his, where he was complaining about things like The Legends of Korra and a statement from the president of Sci-Fi Channel stating they were going to do better about representation in their shows. And he found this absolutely appalling and was very noisy about it. And then when he got all sorts of blowback, he blamed CIFWA, said, oh, this was organized by CIFWA. And I think his reaction was due to the fact that at the end of the previous president's administration, in the first half of 2013, we had a big blow up where we had a series of articles in our own magazine that did not really, well, there was language that was less than felicitous, shall we say. There's several ways to talk about it. But we made some active policy changes that called for a little more editing of our official channels. This was not to say people could not say anything they wanted to in their own, on their own websites, in their own fiction. It has nothing to do with that, but it did say that we don't want to alienate large portions of our own membership in our official channels of communication. And so, and at the same time, another member used one of our official channels of communication to make a racist attack on one of our members. And without going into details, that they were expelled from the organization. They were not the first person to be expelled, but they're really the first person to be in a very long time to be expelled. And it was for materially worse behavior than anything else that had happened. Mm-hmm. That person is one of the people who was actively participating in this slate, and in fact created their own more extreme version of this slate, and even started a little publishing house in Finland that published many of the stories that ended up on the thing, oddly enough, written by the first person I was talking about. And then they reached out to Gamergate, the people who were active in Gamergate, and said, look, for only $40, you can, and they used this language specifically, you can stick it to all the SJWs, meaning social justice warriors. As a result, the nominations for the slate of the Hugo ballot ended up with a very large number of their things, because not that many people participate in the nomination side of things. And they were able to get a lot of their... Some of the people on that had not participated, were not aware, or they were not aware that they were being associated then with a person who is primarily famous for hate speech and so on. And so a very good friend of mine, a former student of mine named Marco Kloos, wrote a very good book called Rules of Engagement. He writes military SF. They put him on the ballot, and he ended up on the ballot. And he actually just withdrew,
right?
Right. He and then Anne Billette also just withdrew a story of hers. because she did not want to be associated, which is, I think, is tragic. It's mm-hmm. I've been on the Hugo ballot twice, both for short fiction a long time ago, and that was a great honor. And so I feel it's awful for the people mm-hmm. who both feel that they're on there under false pretenses, for the people who really are on there under false pretenses, and it's just rough on everybody. Yeah. And Connie Willis, who was asked to be a presenter, decided that she could not, and mm-hmm. publicly did a statement about that, which included the phrase that, yes, they did not break the rules, but when you're nominating based on anything but the fact that you feel that this was the best story in this particular category, the best work or the best particular artist or writer in that particular category, then you're not really playing by the rules,
right,
even though you aren't breaking the rules.
Right.
It's going to be hard to see what happens going forward. I actually will be there because my wife is on the ballot,
mm-hmm.
and she's only on the ballot. She was not part of their slate, but she only got on the ballot after one of the people who had been put on the ballot against his wishes or without his knowledge pulled off. The work she's on there for is, I think, a very important work
mm-hmm.
and deals with some of these issues. So she's not pulling back, not because of it's not about her. It's about the various victims of a particular incident that she wrote about. She's doing it in their honor to make sure that the attacks on them are not diminished and so on. Well, that was kind of vague tweeting. Like, you know, it was really kind of talking around the issue without specifically talking about things. People can figure it out if they really are interested.
If they want to know the names, they can go look them up.
They can. I don't want to give them any more deliberate bandwidth than mm-hmm. they've already gotten.
Sure. Well, I think that's about all the time we've got. I always like to ask, let's finish up with, if there anything that you are currently working on that we should be expecting, so we can watch out for that.
Well, we've got the four Avatar books. We've mm-hmm. got the two Jumper books under contract. I've been working on a couple of different movie things. My second book, Wildside, was just optioned by the Jim Henson Company, and that's all optioned, so it's hard to say what will happen there. And I just signed another option, but I'm not supposed to talk about it until they announce it. And I've been working on some comic stuff based on some of my older fiction and new ideas that would go into graphic novel or issues in graphic novel and then into be used to market back to movies and television.
Okay. Well, thank you so much for your time, Stephen.
Thank you. I really enjoyed it.
This podcast has been a production of the Geek Dad Podcast Network. If you've enjoyed this content, please consider supporting us at patreon.com/geekdad.